Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by Winamp. Subscribe to TWiT and all your favorite podcasts with the ultimate media player. Download it for free at winamp.com. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 257, recorded July 18th, 2010. Smell like your grandpa. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Carbonite Pro, with prices starting at $10 a month. All of your office PCs can be backed up safely and automatically. For a free trial and to learn more, visit CarbonitePro.com. And by GoToMeeting, the affordable way to meet with clients and colleagues. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/TWiT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers the week's tech news with the ink-stained wretches of the new media, starting with a man we haven't seen in ages. I think you've lost weight since you've been on the show, John C. Dvorak.
I think there's something wrong with the camera.
He said, I look younger with the new lighting. You look thinner. You look fantastic.
I think there's something wrong with the camera. I think I'm squished.
I think it's you. Aspect ratio,
maybe it's me. Maybe I've squished you. Let me ask you this, and I hope you won't take this the wrong way.
I'm taking it the wrong way already.
Are you anamorphic?
What does that even mean?
No, that you're definitely not anamorphic.
There it goes.
Also here, yeah, you heard him. Steve Gibson's back. We're so glad to have
Gibbo.
You back.
Hey, Gibbo.
Hey, Gibbo.
Gibby, yeah.
Gibson is the guy in charge at GRC.com. He makes SpinRight and has been in this business for longer than mud. We really wanted to get you on it too, John, on our gray hair edition of TWiT a couple of weeks
back.
Yeah,
I missed out on that. I think I was traveling or something. That would have been a good one for me because I think you had Jerry on.
Yeah, Pornell.
Yeah, we did.
Gibson.
And the but next Jerry one we'll do will be the no hair edition.
The no hair edition. Also here, we got a young man, Anand Shimpi, who started covering technology when he was in high school with a site that has become now the site to read if you want hardcore hardware news, AnandTech.com. Anand, great to see you once again.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. The big story today, and really the big story of the week, and for the last couple of weeks, is the antenna story on the iPhone 4. And Anand, you guys did a great job. We referred to you a number of times last week and the week before with your coverage, partly because you and Brian were able to hack the iPhone 4 a little bit and give us some actual readings.
Yeah, that was actually key to all of this, because you'll actually even notice in Apple's press conference, when they presented data, they still presented it in visual bar format, which is just, that doesn't actually tell you anything, right? Like it's not comparable between phones. And luckily, when, you know, the minute Brian got his phone, he was like, hey, I bet you I know how to how to enable numeric readouts on signal strength. And that's really what set it off.
Well, how did he do that? Because one of the things, and I thought this was kind of a smoking gun that Apple did in iOS 4, is they took out the diagnostic mode that allowed you to see exactly what kind of signal you were getting.
Yeah, so they pulled out field test, and you know, at an
why would you do that unless you thought the numbers were going to be very positive?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to go down the conspiracy theory path simply because there are a lot of things that, you know, it can go both ways, right? But whatever, they pulled it out. Luckily, Brian Klug, our senior smartphone guy, he actually had quite a bit of experience with iOS, how it stores data, and with jailbreaking these things. And he found that, you know, if you it actually stores the configuration of that little status bar, that little status area when you back up your phone. So he thought, well, if I have a phone where I have this enabled on iOS 3.2 And I use that backup once I put iOS 4, once I get an iOS, an iPhone 4, and then I restore that backup on there. You know, maybe it'll preserve that setting. And
wow.
Thankfully and luckily enough, it actually does. And Apple Very hasn't clever. Even pulled that out in 4.01 or 4.1 either. So we for sure thought that they were going to pull that out as soon as we published how to do it. But no, it's still there. So that actually helped us tremendously.
In your follow-up as well, because you were able to go back and see how 4.01, which Apple released last week, modified things. And you have a great graph that shows the new way of measuring bars. It looks like they increased the dynamic range of the bars.
Yeah. So a couple of things we noticed, and Brian, again, was actually the first to pick this out. One, you get more values. Right. So, for example, on prior to 4.01 and 4.1, you might see negative 113 dB and then negative 100 dB. Right. There are a bunch of values in there that you would just never see. And with 4.01 and 4.1, you just see a lot more numbers. That actually helps, you know, really tell you what's going on here.
This is the graph that is very telling, that shows movement from 4 to 4.01 in the signal mapping. Mm-hmm. And
So that was actually sent in by a reader of ours. We were working with them behind the scenes, and he was like, hey, I put this together. Maybe it'll help your readers. And then I sent him the data we got off of 4.01, and he just made a new one there. And then the one below that actually shows, it's something we made, and that shows the comparison between 4, 4.01, and Android. So you can really see that Apple is being a lot more honest with how signal strength is reported now, which is impressive. You know, we have to give them credit for that. They're doing the right thing there.
It's almost linear now instead of logarithmic, which it traditionally is logarithmic. But even more interesting, instead of going down to 113 dB below, it goes all the way down to 121. In other words, you'll still get a bar even if you've got almost no signal at all.
Yep. And it really shows it's designed to show the improved sensitivity of the iPhone 4 wireless platform in general, right? So antenna, baseband radio, power amps, the whole deal. It actually does a really, really good job down at 115, negative 115, negative 120, 121.
When we were talking about this, Steve, with Jerry Pournelle, he made a point which I thought, and I've echoed several times, was really great, which is these are digital phones, and if it doesn't work... if you don't have enough signal, it doesn't work. If you do, it does. It's really a binary situation. What do you need bars for? And I got a very interesting email from a BBC satellite engineer, Dave, in Northolt, London, which I thought, and he called me out on this. He says, I keep hearing you say, get rid of the bars, show a binary, you can make calls light. As a broadcast satellite engineer, I completely disagree. The phone channel is very much like the satellite signals I deal with every day. The satellite downlinks include forward error correction. The receiver puts the signal back together and either decodes pictures or shows nothing, like the phone. And it's binary in the sense that it works or it doesn't work. However, when it's working, it's able to tell you how hard the error correction is working. If it says it's not having to work hard, then we know we can take, say, 10 dBs of rain fade before we lose the signal it's being broadcast. If it says it's near the edge of failure, then we know if there's a thunderstorm, we're going to get a 5-minute outage in transmission instead of a 10-second outage.
And you know, one of the other things that we know is that cell phones do dynamically scale their own power output as a function of the received power from the local cell tower. So if you have a weaker signal, you tend to drain your battery faster because the cell phone ramps up its own output power in order to compensate for the fact that it's got a weaker incoming signal.
So the idea of just having an on-off light is probably not good. I mean, it's not enough. The bars do actually have some value. You agree, Anand?
Yeah, I mean, it's more of I actually agree with the engineer that sent you that email. It's actually more of a predictive visualization, right? It tells you the likelihood that something bad's going to happen or that you're going to be able to continue the call. And that's actually one of the reasons why there's so much of an issue with this antenna bridging or attenuation problem, because it really interferes with, you know, the predictive nature of that visualization. It's no longer a prediction, right? There's this new variable in play. Or at least more of an existing variable in play.
Of course, the other problem, too, is that our head and holding it next to our head is going to change the reception. And so, you know, you're not actually looking at the bars while you're talking. You pull it away from yourself. There, you know, there is a delay in the bars updating. But, you know, that's also one of the things that this changing is, you know, how close, you know, it is to you.
I talked to an antenna engineer on the radio show today. He said, I asked him, is it a bad design decision to put the antenna external on the phone? He said, it's a bad design decision, like, say, putting square wheels on a car would be a bad design decision. He said, well, you're two things are happening here. By touching the antenna, you're detuning it. You're giving it, antennas are optimized for a wavelength. Your finger changes the wavelength it's optimized for. You're detuning it. He says the meat of your hand is also attenuating the signal. It's weakening it. So those two things together really cause the antenna to do a much worse job. But Anand, it sounded like your findings were that the iPhone 4 is still better than previous iPhones.
Yeah, and here's the problem, right? So I don't like to do a lot of armchair engineering because I know these projects, you know, even the iPhone 4, you know,
they had cots. They had cots in there. They were there all night. There were people in the parking lot at 3 a.m.
And they were shocked when they found out that the bar...
You know, their worst engineer is still a lot better than me, right? Yeah, so I got to give credit where credit's due. I'll tell you the way I look at it. There are definitely some areas where, especially in situations where there's very, very limited signal or very, very low signal strength, the iPhone 4 does very, very well. This, I would say, is more of an annoying design decision or an annoying problem than anything else.
But now here's where John C. Dvorak gets involved, because, John, you and I are media guys. and the first thing Steve Jobs does, he comes out on the stage and he says, he starts blaming the media. He calls it antenna gate. He says, you know, the return rate on the iPhone 4 is far lower than it was on the 3GS this time last year. You know, nobody's returning. We only drop one more call per 100 than the iPhone 3GS did. He said, there's no problem here. The media made the problem. This sounds to me almost Nixonian, John. Like,
it was weird. A lot of people are wondering what if he's losing his marbles. For one thing, the media is the one that made this phone such a massive success in the first place because of all the planted stories. And so then to blame the media for somebody just questioning the situation that we're talking about, the phone antenna attenuation, is it's almost ludicrous. I think I don't think he should have done that. I think it made him look like an idiot.
He also... again, in a very Nixonian way, said, well, other phones have this problem. It's not just my phone.
In that voice, too, I understand.
Yeah. I have a dog named Checkers. I have a good cloth coat. And the media are the problem here.
Well, so I would argue that, there were some issues that were caused by the media. I mean, it was a general lack of understanding of the problem.
Really? Really, Anand? Really? You think that we caused the problem?
Leo, I'm not saying you caused the problem, but I'm saying this. When we published our review, right, we went into it and we said, look, here's the situation. It does drop more than other phones. It is something that impacts all phones, and you can reduce it by potentially coating the stainless steel with something. That's a design decision Apple would have to make, or you just put a case on it, right? And that was it. That's all that needed to be said.
He also blamed us for not buying more cases. If you had just bought more cases, this wouldn't be a problem.
Well, you know, and I think the problem isn't entirely how it was handled in the media, right? It was also an issue of how Apple handled it, right? They weren't forthcoming with this. And on top of that, even when they said that they were forthcoming with it in the press conference, they still really weren't, right? Like, it's a downside to the way Apple conducts its secret projects, unfortunately, right now. I think this did point out that this whole education through entertainment way of reporting news, you know, it's not, we're heading down a path that's not necessarily any better than where cable TV news has taken us. And I do think he's right. I think he's fair in saying that, look, some of the media reports really criticized this the wrong way. I do think there was a lot of fair handling of it.
Well, what media reports specifically you're talking about that handled this in some unfair way specifically?
Well, if you look at, and you know, it's not my job to kind of throw my peers under the bus, and I've never felt comfortable doing that because everyone does a good job at what they do, and everyone has their own.
Oh, that's a lie! Come on, Anand, say it.
No, it's say you it. Know,
nobody. I mean, do you really have anybody in mind? That
some people don't do a good job, Anand.
everyone has their own justifications for doing what they do, and in my opinion, the problems I had
you're just
were
weaseling this... out of the question.
So, who, John? You answer it then. Who did a crappy job?
I think everybody did a fine job. What job was there to do? People were holding the phone. They couldn't get a signal, and they bitched about it.
Yeah.
I mean, they
well,
weren't
no, no, no.
breaking
that,
the
that
phone.
That part was fine, right? The issue was characterizing it in this light of, hey, it might be a phone-by-phone issue, right? Especially when the hard facts and the evidence were out there. You know, we published numbers, right? We published numbers. We told people how to prove the numbers for themselves. And we said, this is the story. And what continued to perpetuate was this idea that, hey, we might need a recall. We might need, this might be on a phone-by-phone basis. And all of that, in my opinion, didn't actually serve any real purpose. Right. We established from the very start, this is a physical problem. Like this is an issue with physics. There's no getting around it. If you want to get around it, Apple would either have to.
I don't think
to,
anybody was arguing any differently. I think that the pundits who came out and said, oh, there's going to have to be a recall. I think that's still a valid possibility because the phone is actually defective the way it's made. And sure, they're going to give everybody a free cover now. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think that anybody was unjustified in these particular complaints. I would also say that not everybody reads, you know, your report. I mean, if everybody read your report, they'd be a little more knowledgeable. Right. I'm not going to argue against that idea. But, you know, I don't think it was that crazy.
Did Consumer Reports misstated or was their testing flawed, Anand? What do you think?
No. I think it seems like their testing echoed our testing, which was fine. And it's up to that publication whether or not they feel that that's grounds for not recommending it.
Right.
You know, ultimately, from my standpoint, it was a combination of, look, this is the design decision. These are the design decisions that Apple made. You have to take that into account with how good your AT&T reception is. And if the combination of the two is bad, maybe you shouldn't get the phone, right? But it's really
that's what
on
I've
that.
Been saying. So that's my recommendation is. And by the way, I think that what has happened here is good because there are choices now. For 3 years, I put up with really, frankly, bad AT&T service just where I live. I'm not saying everywhere. Where I live, where I work.
Oh, it's terrible in San Francisco.
In San Francisco, I mean, it's bad. So I put up with it because there was no choice. That was the iPhone, AT&T. That was the Nexus. You had to do that. As soon as great phones have come out on every carrier now, and I'm carrying a Droid X now from which I love from Verizon, and it's like I'm saying, oh my God, why was I putting up with AT&T?
That's because you're using it as a phone.
Well, I know, but it is a phone, John.
Well, I'm telling you, the whole iPhone phenomenon is more of I wouldn't call it a cult, but I'd call it an environment that is completely takes care of its users. It's a totally different animal than any other phone, and I think it has to be recognized as such.
But
and that's
not
why
anymore.
And this is why I thought I disagree. And this is why I think that, yeah, it was blown. I would say maybe, and I was right, it's blown out of proportion a little bit because people kept talking about it for day after day after day. I've never seen so much stupid reporting, and so I'll agree with that. But at the same time, when you create an environment, it's like Facebook that lives among – it's kind of its own animal and something is – and it's injured. People are going to get all worked up about it, and I don't think you can criticize them for doing so.
So you're saying Apple's is hoist by its own petard.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, I would argue that obviously, you know, Leo, you like your Droid X. I think Android is just as capable of a platform.
Absolutely.
The difference here is really a matter of aesthetics and polish, right? Apple puts a lot of focus on making sure the iPhone works like an appliance. And with Google, you have more of like a portable computer. And for some people, clearly there are a lot of iOS and iPhone fans. And for some people, that's exactly what they want. And for others, you know, there are a lot of Android devices sold. I think I agree with Leo. It's a good thing to have this kind of choice. And the network isn't bad for everyone.
That's what's changed is
right?
Now,
like, so,
now you choose the network that works best first. You choose your – to me, what's changed
so,
is
– So, Leo, let's get this straight. Let's stop. So tomorrow, iPhone – and actually, this probably will happen by March – iPhone is on Verizon. Does that change perspective?
No, because first of all, it would make a lot of people happy because a lot of people have been waiting for that day. Maybe it would. It at least gives you a choice. My point is you should do what we've done for years until 2007 and the iPhone came out is choose a carrier first Who has the best signal where I use the phone? Then what's the best phone from that carrier? The iPhone flipped it on its head. You chose the iPhone, and then you were stuck with the carrier. That's what changed, and it only changed for a couple of years. And I think that window has now closed on that. I think you can, and that's to Apple's detriment, because it means there's competition. But now you choose the carrier, and then you choose the phone.
Yeah, I think the position that Apple's in is one of having inertia now because they were first and had essentially the, you know, this whole sort of high-end smartphone market to themselves for so long. But with Android, this really, I mean, it's a game changer. We're not going to see it overnight, but over time, I think it certainly will happen. And I read that the AT&T exclusivity wasn't expiring until 2011, despite the fact that Bloomberg has said that they expect to see it on Verizon next year.
Well, next year is 2011. Yeah. Hello.
Congratulations.
What year is this?
By the way, we want to welcome Lisa Bettany, who's joined us. Lisa is the Mostly Lisa blogger, and it's great to see you.
Can I blame Canada?
Blame Canada? This? Sure, why not? Did you come from Canada?
Well, it felt like it. The traffic. What is with this traffic?
Welcome to the San Francisco Bay
Area. Is there an event over there today?
No, it's Doyle Drive, I think, is what bit you, right? Over by the Golden Gate Bridge, all that construction.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's nice to have you. Welcome. We're talking about the iPhone and antenna gate. By the way, Sparky and Corona keeps correcting me in the chat room. Apparently, Computer World was the first to call it antenna gate, but Steve Jobs picked it up. That doesn't make him any less Nixonian. The Wall Street Journal coined the term Watergate. You could still say I'm not a crook.
I guess the one thing that we haven't looked at, and I know I respect Anand's decision not to be conspiracy oriented, but doesn't it really seem to be the case that Apple did get caught fudging the algorithm for its bars? This idea that they were shocked that this formula was wrong. I mean, the fact is the formula that they originally had ended up showing many more bars for their normal range of signal strength compared to, first of all, what it is now, and also what other phones were doing. So from a marketing standpoint, you given the same amount of received signal strength by the iPhone, traditionally with the equation that they had that someone deliberately set the parameters to somewhere, it looked better than other phones as a consequence.
That was cheating. That was a dirty thing to do.
That really was.
Dirty,
but everyone does that, right? Dirty. So if you look at that graph that we just showed, the one at the bottom of the page that Leo had up on the screen, Apple's, I mean, they're definitely worse if you look at 4.0 versus 2.2 on the Nexus 1, but they're not that much worse, right? All cell phone companies lie about this. It's just that Apple now had a situation where the signal would drop more than the competitors, and that kind of exposed this as a problem. But everyone does this, right? Now Apple corrected it, and they corrected it pretty quickly. And now they're actually more honest than a lot of folks.
So now you could say the bars on the iPhone are the best bars in the business.
Well, and Apple did say Apple did say that they were using AT&T's approved formula for showing the number of bars.
I think what they said was we used our own formula, but now we're going to start using AT&T's new formula.
Right now,
I think the implication was they used AT&T's old formula, but I don't know if they said that. There's a lot. I mean, I don't want to spend the rest of the day talking about this, but there's a lot of stuff to analyze in here. For instance, Steve Jobs pointed out that maybe they didn't notice this because, well, he didn't say it quite like that, but he said, a reporter said, how come I'm not dropping bars on my BlackBerry now? And Steve said, he said, well, because we have an AT&T tower on our campus, but he also threw an and a Verizon tower on our campus, which I thought was kind of gratuitous.
You know what's overlooked in this entire story, which kind of fascinates me?
What?
Is nobody talks about the manufacturer of this phone. It's not Apple sitting over there in Cupertino cranking these things out.
Let's blame Foxconn.
It's Foxconn.
You think it's their fault? No.
Well, I'm wondering about it.
It was designed in California, made in China.
I think the basic functionality is designed in California, and the components are picked in California. But when these guys are given a design and Steve says, I want it like this, I want this thing around the outside, I want a flat screen, I want a flat back – I want this kind of glass. I want you to do it this way. They're the ones who have to put, they're the ones who have to micro, you know, engineer where everything goes so it fits in the phone that Steve wants. They're the ones who had to put this antenna on there. I mean,
well,
it wasn't
sure.
like
except Apple that I think
hey,
it really does matter.
Put an antenna around outside.
I think it really does matter that. That, as Leo points out, there is an AT&T and a Verizon cell tower on the Apple campus, so they're all being irradiated by, you know, these particular carriers. And I mean, you could probably hold this thing any way you wanted to. Yeah. You're standing in the shadow of the cell tower and never lose any bars.
Good point. You couldn't make it fail.
And right. So
one of the reasons I've shifted away from the iPhone, I used it for a long time, is because I finally dropped 4 or 5 calls in a 2-day period last Friday. And I said, I'm sorry. This is a phone for me. I need it to be a phone. And I got the Droid X. And boy, I love the Droid X.
And you had a good alternative now.
Yes. And that's the point, is now we have an alternative, and that's
right.
That's the good news around all of this entirely.
Well, you know, I don't think it's fair to assume, and again, I don't like going down the conspiracy theory or the speculation ramp here. I don't think it's fair to assume that they didn't test this thing in low signal strength. I think, you know, they came out and made the statement that, look, it gets the best reception of any previous iPhone. Clearly, they tested this in all kinds of environments, more than we ever had, more than anyone else ever had. I think this was just a conscious decision. They knew this trade-off was there. And, you know, they're on this yearly cadence, right? So if you look at any company that has to produce a product every 6 months, 12 months, 24 months, whatever, you do make sacrifices in order to maintain that cadence. You know, we see it with chip companies all the time. We see it in all kinds of products. So it's not surprising to me that, if Apple discovered this and they were like, look, we have to ship this thing in X number of months. Usually when you come to the end of a project like this, you have a list of things that you want fixed, but you just couldn't get them in the schedule without slipping it. So they just get kind of rolled up and put into the next phone.
I think we do know also, though, that Steve Jobs loves the design of this phone. And against some objections somewhere in Apple engineering, he said, no, this is the way it's going to be.
They asked him that at the press conference. That was a Bloomberg report. He said it was BS.
Hmm.
He said it was BS. Now,
he doesn't like the design of the phone? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. That's a good question. No, I think what he was saying was I think what Steve was saying very clearly is we didn't think there was anything wrong with it. And we still don't think there's anything wrong with it.
He has to say that now.
We think it's just like every other smartphone. But okay, if you think there's something wrong with it, we love you. You're the customer. So we're going to give you a free bumper case.
And that's my issue there, right? So it is technically, it loses more signal than at least its primary competitors. And that's the only part of what he has said that is not totally true.
Let me tell you, the RIM guy was pissed. The Nokia guys were pissed. They said, what are you talking about? We don't have the same problem. This is a unique problem for the iPhone 4. You agree?
No, it's not a unique problem for the iPhone 4. As we've demonstrated, as everyone's demonstrated, all phones, you know, will drop signal depending on how you hold it. What is unique to the 4 is that it drops more signal. Right. So we measured something like 16 to 17 dB on the iPhone 3GS and Nexus One. And then the 4 drops like 24 dB. Right. So that's a measurable difference. That part alone, the fact that it drops more than the competition, is what's unique to the 4.
I think we're starting to repeat ourselves on this topic.
Oh, no. I got lots more to say.
If you wear your antenna on your sleeve, that's what's going to happen.
Can I interject for
please,
once?
Please, Lisa. some sanity. Inject some sanity into this.
Okay. So there's all these technical issues, but I mean, what does it boil down to for the actual customers that bought the iPhone 4? Because I've talked to, you know, a lot of them, and it doesn't even matter to them. People who bought
the iPhone...
They
seem not to care. Some do. I care.
You care.
Yeah, but you don't even like the phone, Leo. You hate Apple because they won't invite you to events. Let's get that out there.
All right. It's true, John. It's true. No. I do like the phone. I think it's looking a little antiquated compared to Android, but it's still a great phone.
Right.
I mean, honestly, when you look at... Okay, to answer your question, what does it mean to end users? Like I said, it's really a combination of... What's AT&T's network like where you use the phone?
If it's borderline,
you know, there's a good chance that you don't have good signal to begin
with. Exactly right.
This is probably not a good phone for you.
Do you think, Lisa, that people who have iPhones are willing to put up with crappy service?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean...
I agree with Lisa.
I mean, yep. I wouldn't call... I mean, I guess, yes, I'm an Apple fangirl.
Well, you're sitting in front of a 3GS, not an iPhone 4, by the way.
Oh, well, yes, because mine's in the mail. But okay. I've been testing on one all week. And, I mean, for me, obviously, the camera really matters. The HD video really matters. But ultimately, when you subscribe to Apple and you have, you know, all Apple products, it doesn't even matter. And that's a sad thing. But to me, it doesn't even matter.
Like, it's sad.
It is sad. But it is sad. I mean, I've been talking to people and people that love the iPhone, they don't care. You know,
Jean-Louis Gasse, who may you might say have an axe to grind. He was a vice president at Apple under Steve Jobs. He was there for a long time after Jobs left. He started BOS, and now he blogs, and I think he actually does a great blog at MondayNote.com. And he says Apple mishandled this. He says AntennaGate, if you can't fix it, feature it. And don't diss your customer or the media. He said Apple basically decided it's not a bug, it's a feature. He says, yes, it's a well-known problem, but he says this is science fiction.
I think we beat this up to death already, Leo. In fact, those things he just said.
He says a customer complaint dialogue is structured around a two-position toggle. It's terrible or it's nothing. And, you know, it's not terrible and it's not nothing. It's kind of in the middle. I mean, and as you said, Anand, if your signal is good, then live and you like the phone, that's fine. And if your signal's bad and you want a phone that works, then there are other choices. And okay, now I'm going to drop it, John.
Now let's talk about Nokia suing Apple.
What are they suing Apple about?
Well, a bunch of patent suits.
Oh, everybody. Apple's suing everybody. Everybody's suing Apple.
Yeah, I know, but Nokia's got a pretty good case.
Really?
And,
all right, and we're quickly all Googling Nokia-Apple lawsuit.
And I'll tell you this much, the kind of the kicker nobody wants to talk about is, and I've been in these lawsuits and as an expert witness on different things, and the kicker is Steve Jobs has publicly said over and over that, you know, if you're going to steal, you steal from the best, and, you know, the good artists always steal.
steal.
It's going to be thrown in their face.
Interesting. Nokia was not happy, by the way, Nokia said, we prioritize antenna performance over physical design, basically implying that Apple did not. RIM's co-chief executives said Apple's attempt to draw RIM into Apple's self-made debacle is unacceptable. Apple's claims about RIM products appear to be deliberate attempts to distort the public understanding of antenna design and deflect attention from Apple's difficult situation. These guys are coming out swinging, too.
Wow.
They're not happy. I don't blame
them. Well, yeah, I mean, part of the issue is, I believe Steve said, look, as we become a leader in the smartphone space, it's our job to educate the consumer. The problem is whenever I have a company tell me that they need to help educate the consumer, that's usually like the marketing bells go off and I'm right. Like, hey, that's not your job. That's actually my job.
Right.
That's the problem, right? They did this under the guise of educating the consumer, but they weren't totally forthcoming, right? All they said were, here's some pictures of bars, look what happens, see everyone has the problem.
Right.
And that's not how education works, right? If you sit in science class, they don't just show you pictures and then that's it.
I think if the media misrepresented it at all the only misrepresentation was that losing bars meant you were going to lose calls. And I think that's a false correlation. And so I think the media implied that the problem was the bars going down.
I mean, a lot of people have said that the reception on the iPhone 4 is actually better than the 3GS.
I think Apple's saying that.
Yeah.
Is Anand, is that what you're saying?
What we've said conclusively is that in low signal situations, that's true. As we showed in our second article, it really varies other times. I mean, you will get either much better signal than the 3GS or much worse, you know, in kind of normal operating situations. And unfortunately, there's just no real way to draw a thorough conclusion on that without one of Apple's $1 million, $100 million labs.
That's a beautiful lab, too. Did you see the pictures on the Apple website? Man, that's sweet looking.
It looks nice. You know, I wouldn't mind one.
So the conclusion is it was a mistake to put the antenna on the outside.
Yes.
But we're stuck with it for a year.
Yes.
Until they do the next version of the iPhone.
Or at
unless
least till,
they're going to fix something in a couple months.
I think
make it a little better.
I think they're going to fix it because September 30th, that arbitrary day where they stopped getting cases, that sounds to me like they figure, Steve kind of even implied that in the Q&A. Well, we use that day because we think we might be able to, you know, fix this by then. It's not a software fix, right, Anand? Is it a hardware fix?
No, see, I wouldn't actually go as far as to say it was a mistake to put the antenna on the outside, right? So in our second article, we pointed out that or Brian got his hand on like the perfect one mil Captain tape that fits perfectly around the band. And it fixes about half the problem and actually brings the phone almost in line with like the Nexus One and 3GS. Hmm. So, you know, maybe the lapse is more in the materials engineering side of it. You know, they might have just needed a non-conductive coating on the stainless steel.
Well,
band
that's what I think they're going to do. I think it's
just
exactly
anodize
what they're going to
mm-hmm.
do. So, and there has even been a rumor that some people who've gotten newer iPhones, Lisa, tell us when you get your iPhone, that, you know, you right now on the iPhone 4, you can feel a little dip where that black plastic thing is. By the way, Steve said, you know, the only mistake we made, we put that black that plastic thing and that called attention to it. You guys, you found it.
How does anodizing help anything? Isn't that conductive?
No.
Anodizing it is an oxide coating, and oxide is an insulator.
So insulating it, in other words.
Right.
And it sounds like that's what they've done. People are saying it's a little smoother there than it was, and it feels a little silkier. And so maybe they...
Yeah, so we actually tested that. I got the idea was, you know, anything made after week 27. and the way you find out what week you have is you pull up the serial number, and I think digits number 4 and 5 indicate the week. So we got a week 28 iPhone, something that was bought like a day before our article went live, and we measured resistance across that band to see if it was still conductive, and it was still conductive. So I think it's too early to tell at this point if they are introducing a fix like that.
So there's no software.
Software can't fix this, can it?
No. This is a physics issue.
You can't fix physics with software. Okay, I think we've all learned something here. We're going to take a break and come back. Good news for the PC industry. Great news for Intel, but even for AMD, and I like to hear that. We'll talk about that in a bit. Our guests, Lisa Betney from MostlyLisa.com. So nice to see you.
So nice to see you.
Pete Cashmore was supposed to be here, but he's looking at houses.
Yeah, well, it's impossible. I mean, we've been looking for a place for the last week, but it's just like we're both in meetings and we're both doing things.
No, this is the weekend. This is when you go to the open houses, and I thank you for foregoing it. You know, Pete's going to pick a place that's got like lots of pinball machines, and you're gonna love it. It'll be fantastic. You know, it's going to be a guy house.
As long as I'm here. I mean, I want to be here. I think it needs to happen.
Bay Area here, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to get rid of that iPhone, though. I'm sorry. Check it at the gate.
I've been using T-Mobile.
Have you? With your iPhone?
Yeah, because I can do that.
Oh, that's interesting. And how's that been? Has it dropped calls?
No.
Okay, one more thing, Steve. one more thing. Steve could have blamed AT&T. I felt like Steve in his head is thinking, God, yeah. I want to blame AT&T so bad. And he didn't.
Yeah.
Was that a good... That shows he has good impulse control.
He's in the doghouse with everyone.
Why didn't he blame AT&T? John, should he have blamed AT&T? Is it AT&T's fault?
No. It's Foxconn's fault. Nobody wants to listen to that. So
it's goofy, but okay, John, we'll go with Foxconn. Anand, should he blame AT&T? Is that really what he should have said? Look, I'm sorry, but it's AT&T.
No. I think, he has to... Everyone has to work in the realm of the reality that is reality, right? And the reality is the AT&T network.
He chose AT&T, right?
Yeah. So, and this is the design they went with, and I think the best thing to do is just be honest, open, and willing to share as much data as physically possible. And my only complaint is that they didn't do the latter part.
And
I am pleased that.
Go ahead.
I was just saying that I am pleased that they're giving out the bumpers at least, which I, you know, it's the one thing that we asked them to do in our articles. We said, look, this is the right thing to do.
It is.
Other than a design change.
Right. I agree. Make them wear a case. Make them wear a sheath. Anand Shimpi is here from AnandTech.com. So nice to have you. It's your source for hardware analysis and news at AnandTech.com. Steve Gibson also here, GRC.com, the guy who hosts our Security Now show, and it's always welcome. in the Twit Cottage. More to come in just a bit, but first I want to tell you about Carbonite Pro, a backup solution that is perfect for business. Many of you know, this all came about because Carbonite, which created a great consumer backup solution, it's automatic, backs up to the cloud, it's AES 256-bit encrypted, it's 128-bit SSL, you know, all the buzzwords, it's just a great solution. A lot of businesses said, well, we want this too. So they were using individual copies of Carbonite on every computer. Well, now that's fine, but Carbonite said, well, we really should do better for business. And they came up with Carbonite Pro. Carbonite Pro, designed for small business, it's a similar idea. You put the client on all your computers, no per-seat charge. You pay for storage used only. It starts at $10 a month. And it backs up automatically into the cloud, 128-bit SSL encryption, so you never have to worry about the transport. You can encrypt it once it's there as well, so you don't have to worry about privacy. You get a centralized dashboard, which is really nice, so you know exactly which systems are backed up. Your users can restore their files, not just on their own computer. They can restore it from any computer they can get online with. They can even restore it using the iPhone or BlackBerry applications. Those are free. So try Carbonite Pro today. Absolutely free for the first month. 30 days free at carbonitepro.com. Just all you have to do is just do a little thought experiment. What would happen if our data was lost, if our backups were lost? Would this business go on? And you'll realize you need Carbonite Pro. Carbonite Pro. .com. Intel had a great quarter. Best revenue ever in history, according to their quarterly report. Furthermore, AMD would have actually had a profitable quarter, except for a write-off they had to take on some factories that weren't so hot. Is Anand would be a good guy to ask, because you cover the PC industry very closely. Is this cost-cutting, or is this actual growth in the PC industry?
I think Intel said, and forgive me, I didn't look at the report in great detail. It's like, you know, how many more billions of dollars did you make now? I think they accredited it to a lot of their success in the enterprise side, which makes sense, right? You look at the growth of cloud services and just a lot of stuff going on in the data center. That makes a lot of sense. And AMD is hanging in there. It's impressive that they've been able to do this much and have this big of a turnaround without, you know, a brand new architecture or anything like that, which, you know, we will get next year. So I don't know. Overall, I don't see the PC industry going anywhere, right? Like it's still the foundation we need to get things like the holodeck and all the cool stuff we see in Minority Report and stuff like that. But you're not going to get that on a smartphone for another 10, 20 years. Obviously, it's just not where the growth is happening right now.
We need the PC because we want the holodeck.
I mean, it's true, right?
No, so you're right. You're right. You got to write the software on a PC. Intel's net income, $2.89 billion, 51 cents a share. It's the best quarter they've had in 10 years. In fact, the last time Intel's net income was bigger than $2.5 billion was the year 2000 during the dot-com boom. And AMD's, as you said, AMD's report was also very positive. In fact, Microsoft will report next week, and it's predicted that, well, if this is true, if there's growth like this, Microsoft should also have a very, very good quarter. So I guess that's good news. It makes you wonder whether I'm sorry, John.
I agree kind of with the assessment that the business, what we just witnessed is a bunch of, you know, pent up demand for replacement products. I mean, there's all these old machines out there running XP. Microsoft says, screw that. We're not even going to support it anymore. You get SP3 and you'll barely get some support. You better buy some new gear. So everybody bought a bunch of new computers, but I think they may sit on these computers for a decade for all we know. There's no reason to have a quad or an 8-core CPU, but we don't have anything to run on it.
I mean, it's really professional 3D work, video encoding, or just bragging rights. I mean, so I did an experiment, right? I've got like an 8-core, 16-thread desktop. So once Arendelle came out, the new 2010 mobile core i3, i5, i7, I was like, look, maybe this thing's fast enough where I wouldn't notice the difference. And part of this is just I'm crazy, right? But I seriously noticed the difference. I was like, this is too slow. I have to go back to my desktop. But, you know, John is right.
What are you doing on there? Wait a minute, Anand. What are you doing on that thing that you noticed the difference?
How long does it take to boot WordStar?
You know, I do all of my writing in WordStar, so that's actually the number one benchmark ever.
You and Jerry Pournelle, are you a gamer, Anand? Is that why you need that horsepower?
You know, it's not all gaming. I honestly don't have as much time for gaming as I'd like to. I'll save that for another time. But I do all the Anand tech work there, right? So when I'm in the middle of publishing an article, I've got quite a bit that I'm working on at the same time. I might be encoding videos in the background while I'm editing, I don't know, 200 or 300 photos, have all sorts of data that I'm manipulating and trying to surf the web and browse all these different sites. And I just, I've got like a security cam monitor for like 7 security cameras open in the background. Like there's just a bunch of stuff happening. So for a user like me, the desktop is still where you can get that kind of best performance. But I will agree with John that, the software just isn't that exciting to take advantage of some of this stuff.
It is a yawn, isn't it?
It's not going to get any more exciting with these iPhones and Androids and the other platforms, but mostly those two platforms, because all the coders that are creative and that can dream up this stuff are going to put, because of the, even though the software only sells for $1, they can make like $1 million overnight, basically, with some nice little app.
Now, I take issue with that simply because, so this is the argument everyone made when Intel and AMD hit a gigahertz, right? They were like, the software is yawn. My computer's fast enough. I don't need to do anything. And the counterpoint to that is if we just stopped there, if that was truly the case, we would have never gotten YouTube, right? YouTube was built on the fact that everyone had a certain minimal level of performance and they could all do flash decoding, flash video decoding on the fly. And I think that's where we're going to go, right? So you imagine a future where everyone's got at least 4 cores or at least 8 threads or whatever. And it's going to take some, really crazy people, but they're going to be able to do something very cool. I'm not willing to give up on the hardware race until I have my holodeck, right?
Curiously, that used to be my attitude until I witnessed what's recently going on with this. The shrinking platform, the little platform, the handheld pocket platform is really the future.
I think they're so exciting.
I mean, look, half of the show has already been talking about just nothing more than just one of these phones, and that's the phone you don't even like, Leo.
No, in fact, I noticed that not only with my shows, but with the radio show, with everything I do, most of the conversation now is around cell phones. I resisted that for a long time, but it is where innovation is happening right now.
It's a platform. It's the new platform. It's taken over.
Well, what happens to the PC then?
It's going to become a commodity at some point. I mean, I can get an extremely powerful machine built, or I can build one myself for $600. The thing is like, it's like a Cray from like the 90s. It's astonishing.
Well, when Anand talks about this, what do you have? Do you have 12 cores? Do you have 8 cores? How many cores do you have on this desktop?
8 cores. So it's 2 quad core.
You're not going to get the Extreme, so you can have 12 cores?
I have that, but it's on a test bed.
And what the hell? What the hell are you going to do with 12 cores that you can't do with 8? That's my question.
That's the big question.
Right now, a lot of the core race is doing really, really well, and obviously in servers, data centers, stuff like that. But again, I think all we're seeing, 2 years ago, the excitement was over netbooks, right?
By the way, looks like an aberration at this point. It looks like that was kind of a mass delusion.
Well, so smartphones are particularly exciting, and they're going to be more obviously prevalent than netbooks, simply because we're able to cram decades of innovation in the PC industry into a matter of a few years, right? So if you look at how long it took for Intel to go from in-order architectures to an out-of-order architecture with the P6, and that was several years, right? And we're seeing that kind of innovation in a very, very short period of time. And we're going to continue to see that going forward, right? Like, so as Intel and AMD, Global Foundries, everyone, as they drive these manufacturing processes down in physical transistor size, you're going to be able to get. And the other thing is the innovation has already happened, right? People already know the best way to optimally design a single core CPU or a dual core CPU, whatever. It's just a question of how quickly can we get it into the right power envelope. And I think that's a big reason that you're seeing a lot of innovation here. There's simply all the tricks have already been invented. It's a question of when can we get in the right power envelope. And that happens like clockwork right now because of Moore's Law. Did I put everyone to sleep? Is that what
I'm sorry, mean? What?
Can I take it like a slightly less geeky angle?
Please.
Absolutely not.
I mean, let's think of people who have never really owned a computer and all of a sudden own an iPhone and have the ability to edit movies, to put photos online.
That's exactly right.
I mean there's this whole generation, like even someone like my mother, who I introduced to Mac products. Like,
how about iPad? Do you think that that's another place?
I mean, I've poo-pooed the iPad so much, but I just got one, and it is replaced. Like, I had a MacBook Air. I threw that out the window when I got my iPad.
I hope you didn't hit anybody with that.
It just sort of skimmed off.
How many skips did you get? That's cool.
I actually wanted to.
Wouldn't it be good to skip the iPad? I mean, the Air? That'd be fun. Yeah.
But, you know, it's replaced that for me. And it's so zippy. It's so quick. It's so, like, it's light. And, I mean, someone like my mom who just wants to, you know, surf a few pages, do maybe a couple emails, add photos, look at photos. I mean, there's that whole generation who doesn't care about,
they don't care about
12
computers.
Cores. They don't,
they don't know from cores.
They don't know anything about cores. They just want to surf the internet and look at their Facebook account. And I think there's this whole generation, and even you look at sort of teenagers who want to just like put photos on Facebook, they want to maybe tweet a little bit, and there's that whole generation. I think that's sort of where Apple is moving away from power users to, I don't know what to call them, just
the normal people.
Yeah,
the normals.
So here's the issue I have with that, right? So I agree completely. For browsing the web, you know, smartphones do it well enough. Something with a larger screen like the iPad does a really good job. I would encourage you to download Pages, which is Pages for the iPad, which is Apple's, you know, document creation software. Try making a flyer, right? Do the things that they show you on the video where you have a flyer. I did this for my parents a few weeks back. I created a little flyer. They were trying to sell their house, and dragged in the pictures, made it, you know, did it the way that they do it on the little videos. And that thing got unbearably slow. Because it's slow, right?
It's like, not it a good computer is what it is.
Exactly. Well,
I think that a really useful way of dividing all these devices we've been talking about is content production versus content consumption.
This is what Jobs was saying. He says the PC is a truck.
Precisely.
Not everybody needs a truck. Some people will always need a truck. But some people just need a sports car.
And so our large multi-core desktop
machines. The internet
machines.
Is your truck.
our large multi-core desktop machines are our content production engines, which really do that well with large screens and keyboards and mice. But you don't need that for content consumption, which the phone and the iPad both do really well.
And, you know, I would also caution everyone in you know, making sure we're understanding that we're looking at this as a snapshot in time. 10 years ago, if we said, look, the PC is going to be your primary TV device and you know, these set-top boxes and TVs in general, people aren't going to spend much time with cable TV anymore. People would call you crazy, right? But because of this kind of because the software and the marriage of the software and the hardware, we've been able to kind of change that.
And bandwidth.
Yeah, and bandwidth. And I'm really, you know, I think what we're looking at is a snapshot in time where, look, what you want to do today is Facebook and browse the web and this and that. And I think these devices are excellent for that. But I think in the long run, you're still going to see new categories of devices, new usage models. It's not going to end right now, right? Like, this isn't the best it gets. And man, I'm telling you, that holodeck, when you get there, that's going to require a completely different type of device, whether it's a PC, whether it's just a big box full of cores that lives in your basement. There's some interesting things that are being worked on right now.
I'm still hoping for the hoverboard.
Yeah, that was the best part of Back to the Future.
Yeah, I take a hoverboard over a holodeck.
I'd fall on my head. So if you wanted a Microsoft Kin, and who doesn't? you better get it now, because according to Electronista, Verizon is going to return all unsold Kin devices to Microsoft tomorrow.
Oh, we got to get one.
All online sales of the Kin 1 and 2 have been suspended. Basically, the Kin, which according to Electronista has only sold 9,000 units.
Oh, wow.
He's not only
that
so
many?
Yeah. John Gruber said 503. He based that on an anonymous Microsoft source. The real question is this going to end up in a landfill somewhere so that Michael J. Fox can hoverboard to it and find it and say, ooh, look at this, a Kin.
The Kin, I mean, I think their marketing campaign, because I've been looking at sort of...
What went wrong?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the success of the Old Spice guy. I mean, look at that.
We're going to talk about him next.
Yeah, the success of that versus the Kin, where they hired all these actors to go out and meet with their, people on Facebook.
Shoot pictures of their t-shirt pictures.
But I mean, ultimately, it's just a giant brick of...
Sasha Segan on PC Magazine said, quote, "The Kins are misbegotten, crippled creatures compared to pretty much every other smartphone on the market. They've been priced as smartphones with smartphone data plans, and they'll be sold as smartphones, but they're stupid." I added that part at the end. So it was a misbegotten device.
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
I want one. John, we should corner the market on Kins.
You know, one of the big
great collector's items sometime in the future.
So. Especially that Kin one, because it was so little and cute.
The little round one.
You could stick it right in your bra and carry it around. Nobody know yet.
Oh, I stopped wearing a bra, Leo. What about you?
I've apparently revealed too much.
Made a big deal of the fact that it was able to synchronize with the cloud, which I don't think anyone really cared about that much.
Isn't that interesting?
It's like big deal, you know? Yeah. We don't really want that.
Didn't Microsoft just some months back lose its complete cloud at some point, and all these people had to get their phones?
That was the sidekick, the danger sidekick.
The sidekick,
which
crap.
Has also
so
been
who's
killed.
Who's going to trust them?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's also been killed.
Okay, so I would say that, you know, the automatic cloud syncing stuff, Brian Klug, the antenna guy from our iPhone 4 stuff, he actually did an article called Microsoft's Kin, a Eulogy. And that was the one feature that he actually said, look, all phones need to have this. This needs to be in Windows Phone 7. This needs to be in future versions of Android and iOS. It's truly like a great example of something that just works that you don't really have to touch. Now, the other aspects of the Kin, obviously, that's why it failed. But the idea behind this that, you know, you take photos, everything you do is just stored in your own personal account online that you can access from anywhere. That is kind of cool, right? Because ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what we want. We want all of our content on any device, anywhere, anytime.
And yeah, the problem is the anywhere, anytime issue. I mean, I have was up in Port Angeles floating around looking for a specific place out on the peninsula, and I was using a Nexus 1, and the phone just all of a sudden there was no signal to be had because I was in just some area where there's no signal. If I have no signal, zero signal, what good is the cloud going to do me? And this is going to happen once in a while.
Yeah, but you still had local storage of information, right?
Well, yeah, but then why do I need the cloud?
It's for convenience, right? So say you're away from your phone, or say you're on someone else's notebook and you're like, oh, hey, I took these pictures on my phone. I don't have to show you on the phone. I can pull it up on my notebook or on your notebook or on your TV. I mean, it's just that added flexibility is very nice.
Well, I you argue for the cloud. I just find it to be just something that's going to cost me more money.
Well,
and yes, the chat room says the Dvorak hates clouds. I don't hate clouds.
He also hates puppies, kittens.
I hate puppies.
And, so I wouldn't argue blindly in favor of the cloud. I just think you have to use everything to its benefits, to its strengths.
Well, and that's the key. Nobody's saying let's replace computers with the cloud. It's another thing. I mean, this.
Yes, exactly.
The carbon I was just talking about, that's cloud backup. It's backup of your data. I mean, it's not like you give up your data. You still have
it. Do we really need to?
Backup of, using the cloud for backup is fine with me.
Yeah,
I like it.
That's because you're not relying on it. You've got it. Here's another reason to use the cloud. Anand, you probably, I know, Lisa, you're the idea that you use multiple computers and anywhere you go, you can get your stuff is very powerful.
It is, yeah.
The cloud didn't become a hot topic till people had more than one computer.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably.
And I would argue, actually, that this idea of, you know, where to store the cloud, right? Whether it's in Google's totally selfless hands, or if it's maybe a little, you know, the home data center. The idea of your cloud is stored at your home, and that's just like you keep your safe full of jewelry, right?
That's why I like the Pogo plug. That's why I love the Pogo plug. I mean, that's really what the Pogo plug is your personal cloud.
And the one thing, of course, that we bring up once in a while when I'm getting anyone agreeing with me, which doesn't seem to be the case today by any means, is that you can get bounced from the cloud. I mean, what if they take a dislike to you? You're using Google's all their services, and then somebody says, "Nah, you know, we decided you're a spammer. You can't." Boom, you're dead.
People get bounced from Facebook, but on the other hand, it's like saying, "Well, you better not have a website because what if Google bounces you? Nobody will ever find you." I mean, it's not gonna doesn't mean you're not gonna use it. Just don't rely on 100%.
What about my data? My valuable data in this cloud.
So let's talk.
So I think the point is, it's a good thing to have, but it wasn't a feature that would sell the phone. It was. It's ultimately, I agree with Anand that it makes sense for future phones to have this kind of cloud-based backup, because why not?
Oh, yeah.
Bandwidth is there. They're already connected. It doesn't cost anything, essentially, because just data and bandwidth are both now so cheap. But people are not going to buy the phone for that feature. It's just,
by the way,
someday
I had a reasonably good column in MarketWatch about this phone and Microsoft's blunders here that you might want to look up. This phone was had no buzz. This thing was a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, it did happen. It took 6 weeks.
Yeah, it did happen. What am I saying?
It took almost no time at all. You used a Nexus One. Do you like that Nexus One? I'm a big Nexus One fan. Google has killed it, by the way, officially. They're going to stop selling it.
Wow.
Until the Nexus 2.
Well, and then they said there wouldn't be, but now I'm seeing rumors that there will be a Nexus 2. I think it's nice for Google to have one phone that is pure Google so that you can see what the other carrier, what the carriers and the other handset manufacturers are doing. You know, the Motorola Blur, for instance.
What did you like about it?
What did I like about the Nexus One? It's a great phone. It's got a great screen. I love Android. By the way, and one of the things that happens on Android is when you log into your Google account on a new Android phone, it copies all your settings over. So it does have kind of that kind of cloud backup. So my phone, if I move to another Android phone, it immediately recognizes me and puts all my apps.
But don't
on.
You like how hard it is to get your iPhone new iPhone set up? It's part of the fun.
I gotta drag icons all over. At least they put folders. Thank God they put folders on there. I do like widgets. I think widgets are a very nice feature of Android. The ability to, this is typical. Apple says, no, we want you to have a grid of 4x4 icons, and that's it. And with a Google phone, you can have widgets. You can have a weather display. You can have time display. And I think, you know, that's nice, too, especially for, you know.
By the way, we had on the last Cranky Geeks, we had a Blur on the show, and I just had nothing but trouble trying to find it because it was
The new my phone
it's out
choice.
Of focus. So how did they do
stop
that?
Stop it! Is you're like what was that Woody Allen movie where the guy was walking around? He's always out of focus. There's just something wrong with him. I can't focus on him. I would show you this, but I don't have enough cameras. But I really like this Droid X, and I'm going to let Lisa look at my Droid X and see what she thinks and compare it. It's big, isn't it?
It is big.
Stop it, John. I know what you're thinking.
I'm not saying nothing.
All right.
That's what she said.
Since we got Steve Gibson on, it would be important to mention the cryptographic attack against OAuth. Now, OAuth is an authentication and OpenID authentication standards used by many websites and by many users for single sign-on, for login. It makes it very easy to use. Dig uses it. Twitter uses it. Apparently, there's something called a timing attack. Do you want to talk about what that is, Steve?
I'm not up to speed on that. I know about OAuth, but I hadn't run across any news of this
attack. Well, it just happened a day ago, so I'm not surprised.
Oh, yeah.
By submitting signatures over and over again, cycling through characters, and measuring the time it takes for the computer to respond, hackers can figure out the correct digital signature.
So that's what's known as a side channel attack, where as a consequence of the design of a cryptographic system, some useful information leaks out through like not the actual decryption or not the success of the process, but for example, the length of time it takes to compute. And so it turns out that you have to be very careful when you design these systems that you're not letting any information out through so-called side channels. So what this means is that the algorithm behaves differently even when it fails. The way it fails, like the length of time it takes to fail, gives you some information. And if you're really clever about what you feed in, you can end up discerning the internal state from the way it reacts on the outside. And when you get the internal state, then you're able to figure out what the key is. So that's what happened.
This we're going to hear more and more of these kinds of things because Black Hat is coming up later in the month in Las Vegas. And, of course, all the hackers are getting their proof of concepts together. And this is one of them. They're going to demonstrate it at Black Hat. The researcher who came up with it said, I really think people need to see the exploits of it to see that this is a problem that needs to be fixed. Yahoo's director of standards, Aaron Hammer Lahav, who is a contributor to both OpenID and OAuth, said, I'm not concerned by it. I don't think any large provider is using any of the open source libraries for their server-side implementation. And this is most important, it's a non-trivial attack to execute, which I guess you would agree, Steve.
Yeah. Also, I would wonder if it even works over the net. For example, it does. Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Because of something called network jitter. They've been able to demonstrate it over the net.
Very impressive then. Because I was going to say that the uncertainty in packet transit time, you'd tend to lose any timing information if it was, you know, going through lots of router hops. But it sounds like they've managed to null that out too.
Internet developers have long assumed there are too many other factors, network jitter, that slow down or speed up response time and make it impossible to get the kind of precise results for successful timing attacks. According to Lawson, he's at Root Labs, he and Nelson tested attacks over the internet, local area networks, and in cloud computing environments, and found they could crack passwords in all the environments by using algorithms to weed out jitter.
Very impressive.
Yeah, that's some hellacious work, even if it's not something you could duplicate. That's what's pretty impressive about some of these guys, I'll tell you. Speaking of the iPhone, were we? I think we were. San Mateo.
When were we not?
Yeah, I know. Well, a couple more iPhone stories and we're going to move on. I really want to get to the Old Spice guy for Lisa. San Mateo County officials have withdrawn a search warrant issued for Gizmodo. Remember, we got all bent out of shape over this.
What was this, like a perpetual search warrant? This story has baffled me.
Jason Chen was the Gizmodo reporter who had the stolen or found iPhone. Authorities searched his house in April, and they wanted to keep the information that they found on those electronic devices that they confiscated. Chen agreed to submit information that was on those devices, but the search warrant drew heat from critics and me and many people on this show because they violated shield laws that protect journalists. Mr. Chen's attorney went to the district attorney saying, if you agree to withdraw the search warrant, we will grant you access to the information you're looking for.
What does that mean?
Well, and this is why there's a shield law, because you get the computer and, yeah, you're looking for one thing, but it could be a fishing expedition. You can find maybe if this is a journalist that you are targeting, you could find other source information. So the attorney said, look, you're going to have problems in court with this shield law. Why don't we give you the information you're looking for and protect the rest of the information on his system? They said yes, and they dropped the search warrant.
But do we have any idea what information they were looking for? I mean, what kind of information could they possibly be looking for that would incriminate him for anything?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know. They don't say that anybody has been charged with a crime.
And this whole thing is sketchy.
Yeah. I think what happened is that React and the district attorney in San Mateo realized that they had a problem with potentially an illegal search, so they made a deal. They compromised with Chen's attorney. I think this is actually good news. It means that those shields laws do carry some weight. And I think Gizmodo did the right thing. They said, look, you know, we just want to protect our other sources. We'll give you the information about this specific thing.
Humph.
Would you buy a Nexus 2, John?
A Nexus 2?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sorry, you don't buy anything. Would you accept a Nexus 2 free?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the Old Spice guy and more. We're talking tech with Lisa Betney of Mostly Lisa, Anand Shippy of AnandTech.com, John C. Dvorak of ChannelDvorak.com, and Steve Gibson from GRC.com. We're glad you're here today. We're glad you're all here today. Thank you for coming in.
Hey, can I get a plug in?
Yeah.
My Twitter numbers have not gone up much because I haven't been promoting it. So I want people to sign on to the real Dvorak and get me. I got to get some numbers. It's like,
John,
ridiculous.
How many do you have? How greedy are you?
68,700, something like that. It's
how many?
It's nothing.
Nothing.
Say it again.
68,793.
You need more bikini photos.
68,000.
Is that your secret?
I'm just
saying.
That's
only half of what Lisa really
I don't want to see
her.
John in a bikini. I saw Odakta in a towel, and I'm still suffering from that. I don't want to see John in a bikini.
I don't either.
I think you'd look better than Odakta in a towel, however.
Well,
I love Owen.
John, what is your Twitter account name?
The Real Dvorak.
Oh, but make sure you spell Twitter right, because I spelled it with two I's, and I got a...
And you get a Parker site.
Parker site. Here it is. No.
No, anyway. Let's talk. You know.
No, I want to show your page. There it is.
There it is.
What is with the clouds?
It's a cloud.
You got clouds on your page.
Cloud computing, baby. Cloud computing.
That's the only kind of cloud computing John likes. Wait a minute. Let's see who John's following. All attractive women, John. Bobby, who's Bobby Eden?
Oh, that's the stripper that was going to give everyone who followed her some oral sex if the Netherlands teams won the. Hey, why not take a chance? What does it hurt? You asked.
Oh, I'm happy I asked. By the way, she's got 103,000 followers.
She started with 7,000 before she made the offer.
Well, there
it worked,
you go.
Clearly.
She is, according to her Twitter page, number one Dutch porn star.
So, John, what are you going to do for your followers?
Exactly.
I'm going to thank them profusely.
Okay, we've
with
already
emphasis
gone
on the profuse.
You're going to profuse all over
profusing
them?
Profusing all over them once again. This show, and I'm sure they're very embarrassed at this point, but they're
you asked. What am I supposed to do? Lie?
No,
I can't.
No,
lie.
I asked. You tell the truth, and that's what I love about you, John. John offers investment advice on solar companies after attending InterSolar. What now you're calling? You retweeted the guy who's mad at you. That's good, John. That's the best way to handle that, I think.
That gives me those big numbers I'm looking for.
The Real Dvorak. Follow him, and maybe Bobby will notice. The Real Dvorak.
Actually, Bobby is the no agenda porn star girl. So,
like, she's on your show?
No, she's our official porn star. But she knows to come on the show. Nobody comes on the show. It's not a show that has anything other than two guys yakking.
Well, there's your problem. This show brought to you by Squarespace.com. Did you see they just got an influx of some money?
Oh, yeah.
Tons of money.
Big,
yeah.
$38 million, I think, venture capital. That's really fantastic. They are, once again, just the place to go if you want to build a new website. If you go to squarespace.com/twit, you can try it for 15 days free. You don't even need a credit card. And if you decide to buy, use the coupon code TWIT and you get 10% off for the rest of your life. Forever, which is great. Now, and it's very affordable. Anyway, they start at $8 a month for both hosting and, I think, absolutely the best content management system out there. You get these great templates that don't look like templates, and then you can customize them to make your site look unique. They've got incredible statistics and content management. And talk about cloud hosting. They are using some very sophisticated Java, a VPS technology that gives you instant scaling.
Great for photographers as well.
Are you using them?
No, I'm not, but I, yeah.
Why not? We got to get you on Squarespace.
Yeah, I'm on WordPress, and I've been on them for,
you know,
ages.
I think Squarespace needs to, like, reach out to WordPress users because Squarespace, people, you know, everybody knows WordPress. I've been around for ages. Now that Squarespace has a little money, I think that they should reach out because this is a modern platform in ways that WordPress absolutely
isn't. Now that I have my blog and then I have my portfolio and, you know, I'm getting.
Look at the, go to squarespace.com, look at the examples page and then click portfolios.
Yeah. Because I mean, I need a portfolio that can be viewed on an iPad, an iPhone.
Right.
It needs to be mobile. And, and right now the site that I have is Flash and.
Not good.
It's not good.
Not good. Squarespace just does beautiful stuff that doesn't look templated. That's one of the things I like about it. You can't tell it's Squarespace. It's not normally a selling point, but in fact, I think it is.
Yeah.
WordPress blogs tend to look like WordPress blogs. You know, you can kind of, oh yeah, I've seen it. Seamless importing of all your content from WordPress or Movable Type or Typepad or Blogger and out too. So you're not stuck. You can try it free for 2 weeks. Squarespace.com/twit. There's a great iPhone app. You'll love that. Squarespace.com/twit. Give it a try. They really do great stuff. And we do our Inside Twit blog on there. We use Drupal for our big site because we have all these elaborate things. And now I'm starting to wish I'd just use Squarespace because it costs a lot of money for development and customization. And it takes, there's delays and it's just, you know, it'd be so much easier. Oh, well. So what do you think of this? I thought this was a really smart campaign on Old Spice's
it's
part.
It's definitely the best interactive web-based advertising that we've seen.
So we've talked before about the Old Spice ad, I'm on a horse. which I love. It's like
Swan
one of the,
Dive.
Swan Dive. Well, and then there was a sequel, Swan Dive, came out a couple of weeks ago. Whedon and Kennedy, the agency that did this, just brilliant. Mm-hmm. In fact, we did a video dissecting the I'm on a Horse, how they did it, piece by piece with the creatives.
Cool.
I'm catching up with your Barney video, John. I've almost got 1 million views on that.
Oh, really?
You better get another Barney video.
People, go to the Dvorak Uncensored on YouTube and watch Barney.
This is your marketing strategy?
Yes.
This? So what Old Spice did is they got Isaiah, I can't remember his last name, Mustafa, and he's a football player, really hunky guy, right? Mm-hmm. And they got him in, and I think they must have just sat there in studio and watched people tweet him.
Well, it looks like they had him in studio for about 2 or 3 days, and they were watching any sort of at tweets, and they would actually do a video reply.
Right.
And if you go through, I mean, there's like hundreds of them. And there's, at Kevin Rose and...
We talked about that last week because we know Kevin, and he kind of said, get well, Kevin. But there was a wedding proposal there. Well, yeah. He and Alyssa Milano have been going back and back. Back and forth.
I mean, it's
this.
So smart. I mean, it's the engagement factor that really has made this as popular it is.
Isaiah Mustafa.
Yeah. His daughter, Haley, sent him a Twitter saying, why is it you look so much like my dad?
It's like my dad. Well, Haley, the truth is, scientists have discovered that there's a parallel universe, and your father must live in that universe that's parallel to mine. Unfortunately, I happen to be more successful, well-known, and richer than your dad. So just because I'm so rich, don't expect your father to be rich, because he's probably a struggling actor whom no one has ever heard of until recently. So you'll have to keep playing with those old toys. But if I were your dad, I'd buy you anything your heart desires. You deserve it, monkey.
Aww. They're kind of sweet.
And so, he comes up with that on the fly?
Well, obviously
that's
they have
really
a team
good.
Of copywriters sitting there,
yeah,
right?
It's yeah, it's the writing. Such smart writing.
Let me see if I can find the marriage proposal, because that's really,
really
well
good.
Done. This is how you do a viral marketing.
They
right?
even did Reddit did one where he gave them sort of an answering machine, so you could just like piece together all the different numbers and create your own message on your phone.
Really?
Yeah.
So you could do an Old Spice.
You could do, yeah.
So why does this work when so many other social media efforts by big companies just are terrible?
Well, I mean. Obviously, being successful on YouTube is huge, but also just the engagement factor that people are engaging in this, and then you get all the retweets, and then you got all the people on YouTube talking about it, and I mean, it's just, and the writing.
I have
is
a
so
thought strong. On this too.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Every one of these things that's worked has a sense of humor.
Yes, funny. It's got to be funny first,
and all the ones that are serious never work. That's my thought for the day.
No, that's good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll be here all the week.
I'll give you another thought in a second.
Right? Like, Tim, just,
say again?
They're not trying to push anything on you,
that's,
right?
Like, you
it's
know
just,
what?
It's
there
yeah.
you go.
It's,
yeah.
They never mention Old Spice in these things. Well, they do a little bit.
Well, they do. I mean, he's saying...
But in a very tongue-in-cheek way.
Yeah.
Here's
the
marriage proposal. I can play it.
On Twitter, J.S. Beals tweets, can you ask my girlfriend to marry me? Her name is Angela A. Hutt-Chamberlain. J.S. Beals, thank you for your tweet, and I'd be honored to honorably honor your honorable request. Miss Angela A. Hutt-Chamberlain, it seems like yesterday that you met J.S. Beals, but your love has blossomed from a seed into a fully grown love plant. And now it's time to fertilize that plant.
This is part I like. The lights dim.
Angela A. Hutt-Chamberlain, will you make J.S. Beals the happiest man in the world and marry him in real life?
And then the candles roll back out and the lights come back
up. We'll be eagerly awaiting your reply. Eagerly.
It's really good creative, Leo. It's really
good
creative. Good
writing. Good writing.
Yeah. That's what makes it go. Yeah, the whole thing.
And, of course, we're playing it. Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody's, I'm sure, retweeting it and sending it to friends. And by the way, she said yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Would that work for you? I wonder, I think it's...
Apparently not.
I remember reading, you know, sometimes people call when, the sports events, they call the scoreboard and they say, would you put the marriage proposal up on the scoreboard? And I was reading, I think it was at Yankee Stadium, the scoreboard people say, yeah, we get two or three a week, last minute, stop the proposal. Please don't do it. Whatever. Oh, my God. I've made a horrible mistake.
I sobered up.
That's probably what it is. Anyway, so that, yeah, I think success. And congratulations to Isaiah Mustafa, who has now been on every TV show, and he's probably got a great career ahead of him. And again, credit to really the creative behind this at Wheaton and Kennedy, because they did a great job.
It'd be interesting to know how it's converting to sales of Old Spice. Rather than just...
Very good point.
The Old Spice YouTube channel has 75 million total views. 75 million. Now, how much do you pay for an ad in the Super Bowl? A lot more for a lot less, right? Let me see if they say if there's any figures on sales.
It's, you know, sometimes these commercials are so good and so clever that you completely lose track of, or if they even indicate what it is they're selling, you're just transfixed by, you know, how fun they are. It's like, okay, what was that commercial for?
Well, an old doctor makes an interesting point. He says, you know, nobody uses Old Spice. I mean, this is like grandpa's aftershave.
But if you compare it to, say, Axe, that's really prevalent.
That's very hip.
It's really out there. And, you know, it's sort of like right there when you walk in the supermarket. People are all about Axe and their sort of ad campaign. I mean, it is possible that people could sort of switch to, something like, because they're like, oh, the Old Spice guy, he's so cool.
Right. And then they smell it.
Hold on. Does anyone actually think the Axe guys are cool? Like, no. I just thought that was just a big joke.
Yeah, you know who does? My 15-year-old son. It's not aimed at anybody over 13 or 14.
That was my very last audition that I went to.
You went to an Axe audition?
Yes.
That was it? That turned you on auditions? When was that?
Oh, gosh, I can't even remember. Maybe 3 years ago.
And what happened?
And it was a group of girls, and they're like, okay, we're going to pretend... this axe is like, you know, it's like raining axe and you get really, really horny and you watch these two dogs having sex and you're really turned on by that.
Oh dear.
And that's when I walked out.
You actually walked out?
Yeah. And I
said,
I have a master's degree.
I'm sorry.
Why am I here?
I am not going to watch that. Dogs fornicating.
So in comparison to...
Did they actually have dogs or was you were supposed to imagine that?
No, it was all in our imagination. But that, I mean, compared to that kind of advertising, like, you know, the Old Spice guy will carry a lot more weight, I think.
Hey, Leo?
Yeah.
You remember High Karate and English Leather?
Same thing, the High Karate. Okay, English Leather, wasn't that the one that said, all my men wear English leather, or they wear nothing at all? High Karate, the guy had to chop, he had to do karate
because
women were attacking. No, bruisers, women, they were attacking him.
Oh, it's women attacking. That's where the axe thing comes from.
And axe is just, I don't know what the point with axe
it's
is.
It's High Karate all over again.
But the thing I will underscore in every single one of these, and Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong, they all smell horrible.
Yeah.
You don't want a guy to smell
like axe. Well, I mean, Old Spice smells like my high school boyfriend.
That's the only thing that could make Old Spice is a little bit of nostalgia, right? It's because he was 15, he had $1.50 to spend on aftershave and no taste.
No, he used his dad's.
Yeah, maybe he used
dad's. It smells like grandpa.
So this is, I think you made a really good point. Does this sell more Old Spice or does it just make the brand hip with no actual benefit to the brand?
Well, I mean, brand recognition is huge. And, you know, I think eventually it does translate. And
if something's a crappy product, it's not going to save it.
Yeah, but we will remember. I mean, it's the Old Spice guy. So we've already got that. That's one.
You know who's the winner here? Isaiah Mustafa.
Yes.
Nobody else. I don't think Old Spice sells more Old Spice.
I wonder about the whether Old Spice. I wonder if it's been reformulated because I remember when I was a kid and then I remember the smell.
It smelled like blackjack gum when I was a kid.
No, it's no. Old Spice smells like
smelled like molasses and turpentine. It was great.
It smells like cheap gin, really
cheap gin.
I mean, Old Spice also does have a very extensive deodorant line too, right? So And not to sound like a deodorant reviewer or anything, but that is a big part of it, too.
I think it's made with gin,
isn't it? A couple people
in
the chat room use the deodorant.
Wait a minute. Steve just said something. Say that again.
I think it's made with gin.
I don't think so. That might be a little pricey. But it is a good name for the show. It's made with gin. Facebook reaches 500 million users. It finally happened.
Say.
Wow. There seemed to be a little bit of a slowdown in uptake among certain groups, men 18 to 34 in the U.S. and so forth. But Facebook is now starting to beat Orkut in India, which is where Google had two strongholds, Brazil and India, for its failed social media network. Facebook's even beaten them in India now, apparently, or coming on strong. 500 million. They're now, okay, to put this in perspective, there are now more Facebook users than Windows 7 licenses. There are more Facebook users than the number of people in the entire United States. There are more Facebook users than the number of daily Twitter posts.
There's a Facebook movie.
Oh, I want to see that, too.
I know.
I can't wait to see that. The Accidental Billionaires.
Creepy.
When's that
Zuckerberg
out? Yeah, creepy Zuckerberg.
when do we think Google Me is going to happen?
Mm-hmm. You know, all evidence points to soon.
Yeah.
Google says it's announcing its music service this summer. Mm-hmm. That could be through September 21st or something. And I think Google's going to make a big push along these lines. I really do. Mm-hmm. But can it win over? I mean, if everybody's on Facebook, why would you go anywhere else?
Right. You're in that network.
It's a beyond critical mass. It's just rolling out. And this is the audience that I was talking before that has no tech knowledge or computer knowledge, but they want to play Farmville and they want to...
They want to catch up with their high school sweethearts. They want to hook up with their former employee, co-employees, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. I think that's...
And it's being used for business a lot now, too. I see Facebook being mentioned on corporate sites and corporate flyers and things all over the place.
That's that Old Spice thing, trying to be hip, right?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, look at LinkedIn and where LinkedIn... I mean, LinkedIn used to be the sort of business.
Right.
And Facebook was like where you put your embarrassing junk photos. And now it's like, LinkedIn sort of... fallen off and it's all about Facebook and people.
I'm waiting to feel out of touch because I don't have a Facebook account. I killed mine.
Yeah.
And I'm just waiting to see.
You could start over tomorrow, Leo. You'd have your old numbers back in about a week.
But then wouldn't that be kind of embarrassing to say, I can't.
No,
back?
You have to stay off it now. Well, you've put your stake in the ground.
I can't go. I have my tail between my legs. I can't.
Do you miss it, Leo? Was it doing something for you that
you
really feel like you don't have now?
No, I don't. That's an interesting question. In fact, when you do delete your Facebook account, you get this row of people's pictures randomly chosen from your followers saying, Lisa Bettany's going to miss you. Your mother's going to miss you. So there's this big guilt trip they lay on you. I don't miss using it. No, I don't. And I don't feel like I'm in any less in touch with Lisa because I don't see your Facebook posts. I do feel like I'm less in touch with some people that I don't really care about. But if you really care about
ultimately, like for me, the people that I'm closest to, I still call and like see on a regular basis, right? And because Facebook is so public that I do have to be a censored version of myself there simply because that's how you deal with the privacy issues.
I'm willing to bet everybody here uses Facebook not personally, but as a marketing tool, as a publicity tool, as a, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'm also at the point where... I don't call people. I don't see people in real life. All my friends are on the internet. Like, I don't...
Somebody said...
Wait, so you don't have, like, that one person that you've known all your life that you do pick up the phone and call? You don't have, like, those one or two people?
She's left broken hearts strewn behind her.
I like being in my little world where I'm in my dinosaur pajamas and I'm in my little safe place. And I'm just communicating via the internet. And
so you like Facebook because it lets you wear dinosaur pajamas?
And it is successful.
You don't have to have an outward facing. So you use it personally. Anand, it sounds like you use it professionally mostly.
No, I use it for both. But the thing is that, like, so I've got readers, manufacturers, and, you know, my actual friends as friends of mine on Facebook. But I do the same thing when I'm out, like, having dinner with, you know, if you and I were to have dinner somewhere, I'd still watch what I said because I don't know who's around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you and I might plan dinner on Facebook. Yes?
That's true, yeah. If we wanted to make everyone else feel really awkward for not being invited, yeah, I could do that.
John, what do you think? You were poo-pooing all this.
No, I mean, I think Facebook serves a purpose. I think a lot of people find it useful. I just have not, I mean, I subscribe to certain things, and I get on board with this and that, and once in a while you say something, and I say, well, that's a good idea, I'll give it a shot, because you're always, you
yeah,
test everything.
Yeah, that's what I miss, is that kind of chance. But I use Twitter that way a little bit.
I use Twitter to get some information back and forth. I use LinkedIn. The rest of the stuff I haven't been using, I've been thinking about Foursquare and Wurl. I'm probably going to play with, because the CEO is an interesting character.
Wurl's kind of neat, yeah. I've played with it a little bit.
And, you know, but, you know, it's just like, is. I don't, you know, Facebook is just like another thing to do. And then I say, and then they say it's addictive for women mostly. And I see my wife and daughter, and they're on this thing all the time. Yeah. I think, geez, I don't want to be like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, it's too big of an opportunity in the marketing. Yeah. I mean,
that's what I think is that that's the one.
Well, see, I've noticed that it varies depending on what you do. So you're a photographer?
Yes.
And so it actually works really, really well for photographers. Yeah. That's one thing I've seen. From my perspective, I don't know. It's like it's a great way to stalk people, right? Like that's the number one thing I see people doing is just learning information about other people that they don't really have the means to get any other way.
That's true.
And in terms of whether or not like Google's attempt is going to do anything to it, ultimately at the end of the day, it's the same thing for any, you know, market, right? Market share is gained and lost in periods of transition. There's no real transition right now for social networking. So I think things are going to stay the way they are until that next big idea comes forward. And generally speaking, new companies and smaller companies are ones to kind of get on board with new ideas before the established players. And I think that's the only time we'll see a change in market share.
Google just acquired a company this week called MetaWeb, which is a search engine that they say connects data in more meaningful ways than just links. And some have said that the reason Google wants them, they obviously have a very competent search engine, but they want to get smarter about the results they're turning in. And frankly, John Mello writing in PC World says this is actually going right up against Facebook. This is part of Google's attempt to go to continue to keep their dominance against Facebook, because Facebook, combining the social graph with search results, gives you all of this deep, rich information, and Google's afraid it cannot do that. Google said, we've acquired MetaWeb, a company that maintains an open database of things in the world. Working together, we want to improve search and make the web richer and more meaningful for everyone, which is the kind of silly rhetoric that Mark Zuckerberg has used about Facebook.
Well, think of all the data they're amassing. Like
Facebook has more data.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. And that translates to a lot of money.
Right.
I mean,
potentially.
Yeah.
If they can convince users that it's okay to reveal this information.
Is Google able to index into Facebook?
Does no.
It are because non-Facebook users are not able to see Facebook
right.
pages, right? You have to
right.
join in order to be part of the network.
Right. So Facebook has an advantage.
Yeah.
Because they have information that Google can't get.
Yeah.
WikiLeaks is in the news, of course. The U.S. government would love to get the guy who started WikiLeaks.
This is bull.
Especially since it released that secret video of the U.S. airstrike in Iraq. The site's founder, Julian Assange, made a rare public appearance at TED Global. He said, we're overwhelmed by our growth. The site can't keep up with the volume of new material because it doesn't have enough people to verify it. He says the attention that WikiLeaks gotten has helped it because people are just great. I found a place to give this information to.
Yeah. CIA honeypot.
Really?
CIA honeypot.
Really?
Hello.
Really? So you're saying don't give information to, if you do, anonymize it, I guess.
Yeah, if you go through a Tor network or something, but then again.
I ran across a rumor about a month ago, which I was never able to pursue. I didn't really spend that much time, but the rumor was that WikiLeaks was formed by monitoring a Tor exit node and capturing documents that were coming out of the Tor anonymizing system.
So I think we got to look more into this Julian Assange.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I think WikiLeaks is actually fantastic. Don't you?
It seems like a very good thing. It's like a pro-internet sort of thing. Yeah.
And I think Assange deserves a lot of credit. WikiLeaks operates out of Iceland and Sweden, among other places. He cannot come to the U.S. In fact, he's had to cancel three public appearances in the U.S., including one in June at the Conference of Investigative Reporters and Editors in Las Vegas because of his fear of the U.S. authorities. I don't think it's a CIA, John, unless they've really gotten clever. And there's
clever?
I think there's no evidence
of
that.
That's all they do is they're clever. That's what they do.
Have you read Legacy of Ashes? Really? Clever?
I'm totally suspicious, too. Well, I'll get some bonehead things they've done.
All right.
But I'm just not buying it. The whole story, the whole backstory behind that operation is just
fascinating.
That just doesn't sound right.
I love it. I love your conspiracy-minded theories.
It's not a conspiracy. Some guy's working for the CIA. What's a conspiracy? I mean, it's just a business.
You thought Facebook was a CIA honeypot.
I think Facebook might be.
Facebook. Well, we know Facebook has an investment from the CIA's venture arm.
Exactly. And you don't think they're investing and then saying, well, whatever you guys want to do, just go do it. You know, we'll cash in later. There's no, you know.
The chat room says I'm naive because I don't believe it. I'm just naive.
A whole bunch of people are saying that. You should shut down the chat room immediately.
I'm sweet and innocent.
Do your Nixon. Let's get back to that.
I'm going to wear my dinosaur pajamas and do this commercial in dinosaur jammies. It's time very quickly to talk about GoToMeeting from our friends at Citrix, the affordable way to meet with clients and colleagues. Look, a business trip, it's ridiculous. $1,000, according to American Express, the average cost of a business trip. I used to fly up to Vancouver. You'd stay at the beautiful Opus Hotel. You'd have lovely flights on Virgin America. It would be fabulous. But $1,000 later, whereas for $49 a month, you have as many meetings as you want, as long as you want, as often as you want, up to 15 people at the same time. You show them what's on your computer. They can show you what's on their computer. You can pass control around. You can collaborate together on the same document. GoToMeeting's amazing. If you are still traveling for business or perhaps even worse, spending time on conference calls, which has to be the single most painful thing ever, try GoToMeeting. You try it free right now by going to GoToMeeting.com/twit. 30 days free. GoToMeeting.com/twit. Please do me a favor. Give it a try. You will, I think, love it. And it's how we do all our meetings. In fact, if I could figure out a way to do Twit with GoToMeeting, you'd probably like that, Lisa. You wouldn't have to go through all that traffic on the Golden Gate Bridge. Sigh, but then I wouldn't get to see you. When Lisa's here, I feel like I'm on my own private version of the holodeck. John, was that a duck call? Do you actually have a duck call?
I do, a real one too, an Acme, which is one of the world's great duck calls.
This show brought to you by one of the world's great duck calls.
Now, by the way, these things are very handy. That's the Acme duck call, made in England. These things are quite handy in a theater during when they're showing something very serious and it's like it starts getting pretty bad. You just let the duck call loose and you get a huge laugh.
You can't lose. It's a guaranteed laugh. I wish I'd had it I went to see Adam Sandler's Grown Ups. Do not go see that movie. There's not a laugh in the whole movie, and I could have used that duck call a couple of times. Lisa, so you play with the Droid X. Is it too big for you?
I don't know if this can fit in my back pocket.
Yeah, maybe not.
The way I'd like it to.
Yeah. You don't want to sit in a phone, though. You would put your phone in the back pocket?
I do. Well, I'm not a very good girl. I finally got a purse, like an actual girl purse. Because before, I always just carry my camera and my camera bag. So I got a girl purse so that I can
Come to think of it, I have never seen you carry a purse.
I know.
I didn't even think about that.
She has her men carry the purse.
Yeah. I carry a purse. So I guess I'm a very good girl.
That's a merce, though, I think.
It's a merce.
So, by the way, I put my E71 Nokia in my back pocket, too, and sit on it constantly.
Do you?
Yeah.
Not only is it bad for the phone, but I think it could cause sciatica.
Oh, maybe. But I haven't.
By the way, I haven't used the word sciatica since I used Old Spice. I feel like I'm Grandpa. Turning into Grandpa. Actually, you know, Old Spice Mentos comes to mind. Remember Mentos? This was this was grandma's mint until they started advertising on MTV.
That's true.
And then it became hip. The fresh maker.
Oh, and then they did the Coke, the Pepsi.
And then they put it in Pepsi and it became even hipper. But but have you ever eaten the Mentos? No, they're horrible.
I love them.
Oh. They're not that bad.
I like them. They're chewy mints.
I predict
chewy.
I predict a resurgence of Old Spice based on this small sampling of consumers who think Mentos is hip.
No, I said it was hip. They're just chewy and tasty.
They're delicious.
Now, see, I never got the whole like mint as some sort of a refreshing candy thing. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I need it for mint purposes, right? I don't need it for like any other purpose.
I wanted to ask you, and maybe that's cultural, Anand. Did you grow up in the States or did you grow up in India?
No, I grew up in Massachusetts. Actually, only my dad's Indian. My mom's Iranian.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
I was curious.
You know, if you have Indian in you, it kind of takes over any other race.
Well, the name is what made me think you were Indian.
Yeah.
There is quite a controversy about this iPhone app that is an ad for a skin product that is sold, Vaseline face whitening, that is sold in India to literally whiten your skin. And they made an iPhone app out of this, which is kind of controversial.
What's the app do?
Yeah.
You transform your face. It whitens you.
Oh, it shows you what you look like?
I was just in India back in December, and, you know, it's funny. It's like human nature, right? You always want what you don't have. And right. So everyone here wants to be tan, and everyone over there just wants to be lighter. You see, like, billboards, right, of creams and stuff like that that'll lighten your skin. Yeah. It's just like, I mean, humans are weird creatures, man. That's just ultimately what it is.
They sell a similar product in Japan.
We risk cancer to look more like you. But go to India, and they want this. There's a Vaseline Men Be Prepared page. There's a Facebook app. I'm sorry, I thought it was an iPhone app. Facebook app, which will whiten your profile image. Yeah. Permanently, I guess.
Permanently?
Yeah.
It's the Michael Jackson app.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, you know what, John? You're not alone, because a Wall Street Journal reporter tested the Vaseline skin whitening Facebook app and remained unconvinced of its result. Now that's hard-hitting journalism. Thank goodness. All right, I don't know. I just thought I'd bring that up. I don't know if there's a story there or not.
Yeah, but that killed the show.
I know. Maybe I should just go home now. I got nothing else to say. Anybody else have anything to talk about?
You killed the show, Leo.
I literally killed the show. Well, it's 5 o'clock. It's time to go home.
Oh, so it is. So it is.
John C. Dvorak is at Channel Dvorak. That's the place to go if you'd like to see what John's been up to, and he's been up to a lot. Mostly no good.
I still didn't
get to my 69,000 followers with the show here.
Damn. All right. Last chance. We can't stop the show.
Hey, well, it's only live. Wait till the thing airs. When this thing airs, 300,000 people are going to hear it, and they're all going to start following you, John.
You know what I like, though? I really like the idea of holding this show hostage. Like, we're going to stay on the air until John. How many do you want, John?
I need only 59 more people, and I'll be at 69,000. That's all I wanted to get to today.
Well, that's easy.
Chat room?
The
chat
real Dvorak. Yeah,
All right. Let's see. You have 68,943, 57 people. That's all we need. Get those phones ringing, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to stay on the air until John C. Dvorak has 69,000. Thank God he didn't say 70. 69,000 followers. All right, everybody, please go to. You know, the problem, John, partly is you've probably saturated the Twit audience.
I think so.
There's, you know,
I
you
think
three
so,
accounts,
but how did you,
John,
you of course, you have all those other shows,
accounts.
So that's the...
Well, we're at 68,956. Let's roll that tote board and see...
Like Jerry Lewis.
You'll never walk alone. John, we love you. I want to tell you, this man, John C. Dvorak, this man, he does this for love. And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. We have 69,009.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'll be here all the week.
God, we can cancel this show. Oh, man, I thought we were going to be here all night. Lisa Bettany is at mostlylisa.com. That's where you go to find her photography. Now that you're moving to the Bay Area, I know that Alex Lindsay and I are both fighting over you. We both want you to do shows for us. So I'd love a photography show with you.
I would love to
and
do
I'm sure
a photography
John,
show.
I mean, Alex has probably already come to you.
Can I put my plug in?
Yeah, what's your plug?
My camera.
Congratulations. Wow, that was a big story that I completely forgot. Camera Plus. Wait a minute. Now, tell us about this. It said you made like $150,000 in the first month.
A bit more than that.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
But now, was that the giveaway, you think, to put that over the top?
Well, I mean, the app is great. So I think it just sort of, I mean, obviously there's the marketing power behind Tap, Tap, Tap. They're amazing and they've made great apps. So there's that behind it. And I think just a lot of people are sharing the photos. Obviously, my great effects.
So it's $1.99 and you sold like $200,000 worth? What?
I think we've done a quarter of a million.
In the first month?
Yes.
Holy cow. So I think I should get a job with you. Forget you getting a job with me.
I mean, this is I haven't got the money yet, but it will certainly change my life.
It will. That's great. That's why that's why you and Peter are buying a house. So now it can be a girl house. Camera Plus, the ultimate photo app. Go to CAMERAPL.US. Wait a minute. Why am I looking at John C. Dvorak when I could be looking at Lisa Benton?
There you go. Better idea.
It's the duck call. The duck call
The duck is calling me.
I just ordered one online, by the way.
Did you really?
Amazon has them.
Oh.
Did you really?
I need a duck call.
Wow.
Oh, they do. Good. But you should order Lisa's product. People have to realize that this woman is really an outstanding photographer.
She really is. And she's amazing. I really love her stuff.
Yeah. Needs to probably become better known as such.
Hi, I'm Lisa Bettany. As a photographer, I'm passionate about one thing, capturing moments.
And my dinosaur
Lately, I've noticed that some of my best shots aren't taken with my expensive DSLR, but with my iPhone.
So this is an
iPhone.
Which is
why
I can't stop
I've been working with Tap.
I can't stop it.
I can't stop it.
It just keeps rolling.
If you want to see more of Lisa Bettany, Camera Plus, CAMERAPL.US, or go to her website, Mostly Lisa. I'm sure you have a plug on Mostly Lisa, right?
Oh, yeah, little bit.
MostlyLisa.com.
A little bit.
Thank you for being here, Lisa. It's great to see you. Thank you, Steve Gibson. Steve is the host of Security Now, a regular feature of the Twit Network. Every single Wednesday, we record the show. It comes out every Friday. Is it Friday? Yeah, Friday.
No, Thursdays.
Thursdays on the Twit Network.
Or on Wednesdays, shows up on Thursdays.
Find out more at grc.com. And, of course, that's where you can also get Steve's great SpinRite, the world's finest hard drive and maintenance utility.
And my Twitter account is sggrc.
Oh, you know, I suppose we've got to go.
Blatant plugs.
I suppose we got to go through everybody's Twitter account. But you know what? This is a big deal, John, because Steve was like the last Twitter holdout.
Now it's Jerry who's the last Twitter holdout.
Did Jerry start one?
I don't know.
Jerry could get big numbers pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Gibson is SGGRC. Lisa, you're Mostly Lisa on Twitter? Or
I am Mostly Lisa.
On Twitter.
Are we going to stay here until I reach my next milestone?
And what is your goal? What is your goal?
I don't know.
Let's see what Lisa's doing. You know, I don't want to leave.
I mean, it's sad when
you got 21,000 followers. Now, come on. You're doing
fine.
Yeah,
I'm doing. I like the quality. I think I love my Twitter.
That's what people say who don't have a lot of followers. I have good followers.
I do, though. They post. I love looking at people's pictures. And come on.
It's the quality, not the quantity. GRC.com, SGGRC on Twitter. Thank you, Steve, for being here. Really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Leo. Glad it was great.
It was really fun. A great show. Steve jumped in at the last minute, and I appreciate it. Anand is at AnandTech, AnandTech.com. It is the site for people who are interested in, you know, the nitty-gritty details of hardware, mobile now, as well as desktops, motherboards, CPUs. It's always been a great site, better all the time. I'm so glad you could join us today, Anand. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. It was awesome.
Great to have you. And what is your Twitter handle?
Anand Chimpy.
Oh, easy enough. Do you use it for any, or is it just personal?
I use it just to kind of, followers get like little tidbits on stuff I'm working on. You might see a benchmark or two, we've been using it to show off like, smartphone battery life and stuff like that as we finish the tests.
Awesome.
And there you see the retweet.
I see the retweet.
Yep. You just get kind of a little bit of inside info on what I'm working on, when I'm working on it, things I'm running into, right. Stuff like that.
Well, let's get his follower count up, too, as long as we're at it. Thank you, John, Anand, Steve, Lisa. Thank you all for being here. I want to do a little plug from – I don't usually do much plugging, but we are going to be in Detroit in a couple of weeks. We're going to the Rouge plant to take a tour of the Ford plant there on July 30th. And then July 31st, we're going to be at Maker Faire at the Henry Ford Museum. I can't wait. We'll stream the, both of those live at live.twit.tv. But that's not the plug. The plug is I'd like you to come see us. We're doing a meetup Friday, July 30th, at the Hyatt Dearborn in the Archimedes Lounge, 7 to 10 p.m. So if you're in the Detroit area... we'll be at the Hyatt Dearborn Archimedes Lounge, 7 to 10 p.m. If you are going to go, we're trying to get a head count because this will accommodate a few dozen people. But if everyone who listens to this show shows up, I'm going to need Tiger Stadium. So we may move the venue. I don't know. So email Lisa at twit.tv if you're going to go, okay? We'd love to see you. And truthfully, I think there'll be plenty of room. Archimedes Lounge downstairs, 7 to 10 p.m., Friday, July 30th. And do watch our live stream from Dearborn. It's going to be a lot of fun on July 30th and August, July 30th and July 31st of this month. You can watch this show. We do it live every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern. That is 2200 UTC at live.twit.tv. But you can also subscribe. We've got audio and video available at twit.tv. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. Another twit. This oh, stay tuned, amazing. By the way. Tom Merritt, Roger Chang coming up with East Meets West. Stay tuned. Another twit. He's in the can.